think some people just have a concern with the R word, about racism and being called a racist.
A long-established leader in the Indigenous community, Jody Sizer is now leading as a director of the Collingwood Football Club. And here, she addresses the sensitive subject of racism head-on, sharing her vast experiences and expressing the need for truth-telling and education. Our guest today on In The Game is one of Australia's foremost Indigenous leaders who has recently joined the Collingwood Football Club board, Jody Sizer. Thanks for your time and welcome.
G'day, thank you.
I say thanks for your time because it seems to be something you don't actually have a lot of.
That's true. I know I'm not the only one, but it's a pretty busy time at the moment with the co-CEO of our own company and PwC's Indigenous Consulting. Three young daughters, 5, 7 and 11, and a number of boards of which some I chair and others I'm a director of. So it is often a fine balancing act.
There'd be, just on speaking to you and others about you and doing some online research, that there must be more than a dozen requirements in your life in a work sense right now.
Well, some days it might feel like that. I think there's just a handful of priorities. Chairperson of the Australian Institute for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies, which is Australia's largest cultural institution and holder of cultural knowledge, which is very exciting. As co-CEO, as I mentioned, of PIC, our company, which is a national business, 5 years old and has 60 staff, can be quite demanding across 7 locations. But of course, the Collingwood Football Club and Ebony Institute, which is an emerging black think tank. So they're the bulk of what takes up the time outside of being mum of 3 gorgeous daughters, all in primary school.
Yeah, taxing, isn't it?
It's great. Well, there's different areas that really do fill your cup, and I think that each of those board opportunities are really strongly aligned with my values and similarly at work. Mm. So whilst they are seeming like a job, then they're very much a win-win opportunity of being able to share some of my knowledge and expertise and drive towards that greater goal of making impact. There's a lot that they all have in common, in fact. So
yeah,
it's a positive thing. And with Collingwood, in fact, it's great to be able to bring the girls along, and it just encourages us to get to more games, which wasn't always as much of a priority as it has been the last couple of years. So I've very much enjoyed that.
You are a lifelong Collingwood supporter?
Absolutely.
Yes.
All of our family was, in fact, except for my brother, who's Carlton. There's okay. always one that seems to stray from the pack, but my stepdad was a strong Collingwood supporter and dragged us along to games very frequently in our childhood, so it was born into us in that way. I haven't quite achieved the complete brainwashing process for all three of my daughters, but we live down near Geelong and my husband's a Geelong supporter.
Right.
And he's trying hard to hold on, but I think we're getting close, and I reckon if we can pull off the premiership this year, I'll be sorted.
Felt so close last year.
So close. Yeah.
And when you refer to alignment, as you did a moment ago, obviously taking the role now as you have with the Collingwood Footy Club, how does that align with your other projects and your other ideals?
Well, I've spent a lot of time working within communities, and I started out my professional career as an auditor, which has brought forth my love of process and numbers, but really my deep passion is really about creating change. And for 10 to 15 years, I worked within communities, but realised that I had a greater drive for broader system change and change at the highest level, which would have a greater impact on the ground. Whilst I'm still very passionate about community-led and Aboriginal-led solutions coming from the grassroots up, that I feel like my opportunity to make a real difference is coming from bringing together leadership and those of influence and being able to drive change from that greater system change level.
Okay, and is an organisation like the Collingwood Football Club still arguably the biggest sports club in the land? West Coast might argue
that.
Otherwise, but that Collingwood would also argue quite ferociously that they still are. Are you able to facilitate change in a way that is greater through a Collingwood Football Club than you would otherwise?
Absolutely. So each of those have an opportunity to drive change in the mandate that they have and the work that they do. Whilst in a day job as a consultant, we're working along our communities and driving change from how do we set up programs and how do we realise impact, how do we measure that impact. Organisations in the sporting arena have such a great reach of influence and being a captive audience. I don't know that there are many in which the light shines brighter on that of Collingwood Football Club, and it's a great platform to demonstrate leadership in how we'd like to see the future conversation, to inform the narrative, but demonstrate in our actions what good looks like.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about that potential. And certainly in onboarding with the club, it was confirmed that genuine appetite to really drive and lead, certainly in the Indigenous space, which is why they were one of the first to have an Indigenous person around the board.
Mm.
And it was also a really exciting time of change for the club, in as much as they're absolutely passionate and driven by winning premierships. We really need to tell our greater story of the broader reach we have within the community in the work that we're doing through the Magpie's Nest.
Yep.
And in supporting the homeless and the many other programs that we have, and really driving that purpose-led organisation, which is really about our broader community, the impact, therefore, we can have on the Australian maturing of our nation and the narrative that goes with that. So I think we have a really important role. And having sat in the seat for a bit over 12 months, with all the support of the board, we feel like we're really well-placed to lead that next chapter.
And do you feel personally that you are leading the way for that club on this, or was it on that path already prior to you joining about a year ago?
Absolutely on that path. So Debbie Lovett is the Aboriginal Programs Manager there, and there's a whole lot of exciting activities that are being done with various things like practical programs like the Community Boots Program, and but the partnership that we have with Gambina and Dadi Monwara, the work that we're doing up in Tennant Creek with the community program up there. We've just about to launch our stretch wrap on the 30th of May, which is the Reconciliation Action Plan. It's 18 months, almost 2 years in the making. It brings together a consolidated roadmap of what our actions are going forward. So we're excited to be able to spend that time across the whole club to say, what is it that we want to pay attention to, charting a course for the next 2 years. But to be honest, in that process, we're really consolidating all the efforts that had been done sort of individually, but looking together to consolidate that platform to say, what's our next big reach, and what is going to be our signature mark that we can lead across the industry and the game?
Do you have an idea at the moment what that is?
We've got a long list of ideas, and it really is getting a full appreciation for the great reach of Collingwood, the influence, the assets that we've got, the brand that we have, and how do we fully realise that potential for our mob, for our community. So I've got ideas every second week.
Yeah. But is there anything you can share with us now on that front?
And I think only watch this space.
Okay.
But it will happen. And in launching this stretch wrap on the 30th, you'll see that consolidating of some of the basic things that we've already had 90% of our club go through cultural awareness training, and some of those basic things that have already been done, all those programs I've already mentioned, but we're actively pursuing some really cool ideas.
Yeah, the whole premise of a sporting organisation like a Collingwood being a leader in this space, it wasn't that long ago when it was not considered that, wasn't it? I mean, this club has had a questionable history with some issues and people within it. I mean, the Nicky Winmar situation became an iconic moment in how we reflect, didn't it? Alan McAllister, a former Collingwood Football Club president, had moments. Damien Monkhurst on the ground. And even the Collingwood connection to the Adam Goode situation.
Yes.
Were you personally, Jody, reticent at all to join this club given some of that past?
No, absolutely not. There's no denying that there have been some regrettable incidences. And you're only recently watching again a doco of longing in the story, and having seen different conversations with Nikki and seeing the current day impact that still lasts in their lives from those incidences, that we're certainly, you know, I'm not removed from that, in that racism is a real thing, and it's a real thing that has been part of the game in the past. But it's also part of our schools, part of our workplaces, and in far too many places across the, almost, I don't know if there's an industry or, you know, chapter in our lives and where we don't get exposed to that as an Aboriginal person. So when these things happen in the public light, it is painful for all Aboriginal people to see that, and to see our brothers and sisters live that in a public forum. But it's reconfirmation that this exists, and that when there is some shock or surprise out in the broader narrative about this being the case, or potentially denying of the existence of racism, then it sort of brings forth the importance of having the conversation to acknowledge that this has taken place, this is not okay, this is not what we want things to be like in 10 years to come or for our kids or our kids' kids.
Mm. Is the conversation the most important tool?
Well, truth-telling is the most important. Having a conversation around every kitchen table in Australia where we feel comfortable with our history and the impact of our history on today, what that means in, whether it is, of course, our schools, our workplaces or our sporting fields, that we just have to be honest with ourselves about what has taken place, and those incidences are examples of that. But we'll say, you know, there's not a week that goes by, there's not an Aboriginal person in Australia that hasn't experienced racism in some form, which is why it's so important for us to take a lead in saying what zero tolerance looks like and being active in that, and then having the conversation that setting the narrative going forward. Because then people respond. That we've had a couple of instances in the club where we've seen people in the our fans in the stands report instances of racism. So people are coming forth and saying this is not okay.
Do you think we'll ever get to the phrase zero tolerance?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. That, you know, we're such a young nation, you know, relatively, and we've come such a long way. And if we don't step forward into these uncomfortable spaces and really, I guess, unlearn and some of the, you know, the chapters of conversations that we've had about our history that we weren't privy in many of our schools, as, you know, people of my age and more senior haven't had the conversations to learn about history, whereas my daughter, who is in grade prep, they're learning about the Kevin Rudd apology.
Right.
So we have to have those conversations for at least filling the gap of knowledge, which probably does require us to unlearn some of the ways of which we, some people may be thinking at this point in time. We're not going to bring everyone along. I've always got this sort of 20-60-20 rule, that there are 20 that are really strong advocates and get it.
Yeah.
And there's probably 20% that I think that are always going to struggle to really understand, and that's probably because they won't ever fully engage and for whatever reason. And I think there is sometimes that 60% in the middle of the Australian population, depending on what information they've got access to and have been informed, that might sway one way or the other in Aboriginal affairs. And there's been different chapters in history where you see that. Overwhelmingly, in the 67 referendum, we saw such a swell of support in advocating for rights of Aboriginal people. We saw it in the bridge walk across the bridge and movement for reconciliation. And now I hope we see that in the movement for treaty.
Right. The 1967 referendum, it's so close to our current life, isn't it, to think that back then it was still part of life for the non-inclusion of the Aboriginal person in what was going on in the country.
And how that plays out in various institutions. So women were having babies on balconies in hospitals, and the segregation of people in pubs or other places, that this is something that's very recent within our history. And if we don't step into these uncomfortable spaces, then, you know, we'd live in an Australia where women wouldn't be able to vote. So we have to acknowledge what is the Australia that we want to be, what really realise our potential, and maturing as a nation, having those conversations is something we need to do.
Yeah. The uncomfortable spaces to which you refer across this whole gamut of this conversation, does that include, in your eyes, Jody, or in your joining the Collingwood board, conversations with Collingwood people, inclusive of Eddie Maguire, who has found himself in an issue that we discussed before? Did you need to do that with Eddie and others in order for you to take the role on the board?
We had, before joining the board, I was part of the Reconciliation Action Plan Advisory Committee, and we'd had conversations across the club about what Collingwood wanted to do, and they had been active in doing some of the programs which I've already made mention to. And at that point in time, we did have a direct conversation just as a testing and confirmation with Deb to say, it was at the time 2 years ago when the Lumumbu conversation was live, and I asked Deb directly to say, I know I've been in organisations and spaces which are have a culture of where racism is okay, and I need to know directly from you in holding this position on the advisory committee, is that the case at Collingwood? And Deb Lovett is a staunch, passionate, strong leader within our community. I know that she would not be there if that was the case. And she was adamant immediately in responding no. And everything that I had felt and seen knew that the answer to that was no, but I needed to hear that.
Yeah.
And just as confirmation, within 2 hours, Eddie had come to the the committee, and that's got a half a dozen really strong Aboriginal leaders across the state of Victoria who come together to say, what is it that we want Collingwood, what can we do actively in moving forward? So we're doing that for 2 years now, but long before the board appointment, and having that really direct conversation with Eddie to say, this is what zero tolerance is. It doesn't mean silence, it means active participation response to any incidences, and we need to know that the club's behind that, we're here to support you, and it was just absolute 100% confirmation of the way in which we want to move forward.
Yep.
And the leadership of the club in Mark Anderson and all of the board members are absolutely, unequivocally, 100% supportive of the importance of the role, the importance of the conversation and charting the course forward. A massive appetite for real impact, and prioritising that amongst the many things that the club's got moving at the seven different teams. The business of sport and all things that what's the future of the club look like.
Yeah.
It's absolutely on top of the priority list.
Right. And Jodie, we're speaking in a week in which the 18 club chief executive officers have been shown the Adam Goods documentary. It's, as we speak, to be aired publicly in about a month or so's time. Mm. Have you seen that documentary?
No, I haven't seen it directly. I'll be seeing it next week.
Yeah.
But we certainly did live that time and that chapter. And
how do you describe that chapter, that 2014-15 period, Adam Goods' last 2 years of an amazing AFL career, a 17-year AFL career?
It tells a story of reality for us as Aboriginal people, but for any person to ever have to leave the game in the way that Adam Goods had to is unacceptable. For any person to be Australian of the Year, Brownlow medalist, All-Australian, absolute champion, to have to leave the game in the way he did is just unacceptable. And the game, the industry, should just never accept the possibility for that to ever happen again. And there's no question that racism was the active part of that as an Aboriginal man. And how would you ever think that an Aboriginal man did a traditional dance in Indigenous round, in a game that was, you know, we created that, Mungrup, on the field and was booed to the extent of what he does. I think that the question is, what does that mean for us as a nation? So that highlighting of that experience and the months of pain that went forward from that, and I know that the second doco looks more into Adam's direct experience, that's a story that needs to be told, because we have to learn from that and get it, ask ourselves the question of what do we actively need to do to ensure that that never, ever happens again.
When you ask that question, what does Australia need to do out of it? What is it primarily in your eyes now? What's the greatest learning to take out of it?
Well, it's the truth-telling part.
The truth-telling, yeah, and the unlearning.
The unlearning, and that us as a nation need to be ready to do that.
Because there are people right now, and it sickens me, that they will deny that it was a race-driven booing. And that sickens me, because I, like you, I witnessed it too, and I feel it was. And I don't subscribe. And people get angry about this, but I get really worked up when people say it wasn't.
Yes.
And I'd imagine you would even 1,000 times.
I know. Well, I always have to have a bit of a chuckle. I think Tanya Hosh mentioned last year in an article that she loves it when non-Indigenous people tell Indigenous people what racism is, what it feels like.
Yeah.
That you know, people are going to have their own narrative about what if the people who did boo, what was their motivations to boo for. But and I've heard booing for other people for other reasons, but there's just no question that was the case.
Mm.
And if we want to, is the question about denying racism at that point, or is it about denying the existence of racism as a country? So, you know, I've got a list as long as my arm from things that I've seen just in the last couple of weeks that are in different pockets of our communities. That, you know, there's an Aboriginal leader who's such an amazing, significant elder just over the border in South Australia, who had a poster, was running for election, and plastered across his name in big black text is "Kill all Abos."
Yeah.
So, you know, I could continue to give examples of the existence of racism, and that's what it's telling us, that this exists, this is active, it is impacting our people's lives, what are we going to do about it? And if we don't do anything, we are never going to achieve parity in any closing of the gap measure, in any inclusion of Aboriginal people. And, you know, imagine a game of footy without the Goodsies and the Mickey O's and the Leon Davis, the Travis Varkos, the the game without our Aboriginal talent. So imagine the game with Aboriginal talent at all levels and coaches and more board members and EOs and the potential. It's something we should do as a nation to realise our potential of coming together so we don't have an us and them feeling. It's realising the strength of Aboriginal people, our culture, our history as part of the Australian identity.
Mm.
Not something to be fearful of, not something to be derogatory about.
The us and them thing's an interesting part of this conversation, isn't it? Because it is that way, isn't it, unfortunately?
In some places, I fear that there's a fear that gets in between, which is informed by a lack of understanding and some ignorance. I think we're really taking positive steps in the country and feel like we have made significant chapters of progress. For example, in some industries that have looked at their workforce and said, you know, it's actually not okay to, you know, in the AFL we've done really well at capturing talent, but we don't see as many coaches or, you know, now we're seeing board roles as a position. In the medical profession, the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association have taken massive steps over the last 10 years to increase the number of Aboriginal doctors in the profession, and we now have parity of the number of enrolled undergrads, Indigenous people enrolling to be doctors, as we do for mainstream Australia through that positive action. And so that's a great story, and if we can do it with medical professionals, certainly we can do it in a game where we bring so much value.
Back on the Adam Good situation for a moment, Jody. When you say you haven't seen it, you lived it, and the AFL's response to as it unfolded, are you disappointed with it, the AFL organisation?
As a whole, I think that it's. I wonder what would have happened if we'd be having this conversation if the doco wasn't made.
Right.
What would be the response? What would be the response?
So it's
now
forcing us to have this conversation, not you and I, but the industry, is that what you're saying?
Well, you and I and the industry.
And the industry.
That to say, where are we at? What did this tell us? Have some reflection that even though in pockets of rooms that I was involved with, we're certainly having active conversations. Are we having it as an industry? I think Tanya Hosh has led some exceptional work and commissioned some research of racism in the game, how Aboriginal players have left the game. And I think that it makes us take notice of some of those you know, real lived experiences of Aboriginal people in the game, post the game, what that means. So I think that we're now with the doco there, it really is forcing the importance of that conversation here and now.
Can I ask a question again? Are you disappointed, or were you disappointed with the AFL's lack of response on it?
I think overall, as a, I think the AFL leadership, in trying to grapple with what the action would be. I think that Gill acknowledged that he should have taken action earlier and what that would have stood to achieve at that point in time. I think now in asking the question, reflecting to say that, of course, there should be, if we're going to talk about zero tolerance, and what I'd expect from our club is that we need immediate action followed up in a timely way. What I guess I focused on at the time is that us as a nation, how we can wrap around and show support to Adam and how we as communities respond to that. And the AFL, to be honest, in reflecting a response to the question, is that they could take a leadership role in that, demonstrating that action across the industry as a whole and to the nation as a whole.
And is that the conversation, the word we used before, is it the unlearning? And if it does happen again, or if it heads down that path, what, when you say immediate action, what needs to be done? Is it to call press conferences? Is it to even get onto the centre of one of the venues in question? Is that all part of the possibilities around stopping this happening again?
Well, if I had to sort of on my feet map out what a plan would look like, I think the first thing is to say it's not okay. We'll call it out as racism and call it what it is.
Because there was the reluctance to do that, wasn't there, from a number of people?
I think some people just have a concern with the R word about racism and being called a racist. There's all different levels of unconscious bias that play out, and we do a lot of work in my day job about what unconscious biases and how that plays out in recruitment of people and through different decisions that we make and just the confirmation biases that we have as human beings.
The preconceived notions we have for whatever reasons. Is that,
that sense. So that's a different conversation, but there is active racism, there is casual racism that plays out and it has an impact. And I think, you know, things that we can't deny if we look at the numbers of where the status of Aboriginal people from our from the health status that we have in our communities and some of the social demographic numbers that we have, that there certainly isn't parity. And there's a whole bank of research that gives some indication as to why, and racism is certainly part of that. So the any effort that's put into denying the existence of racism is just factually incorrect. And getting an understanding of what it is or it isn't, if that's the conversation that we need to have as a first step, to say what it is and calling it out when it exists, and then, therefore, what does the action look like?
Mm. And again, not wanting to put you on the spot, but the roadmap out of an Adam Good situation again, just if I can, just to expand on your thoughts, because clearly you've, as you say, you've lived it without seeing the documentary. Calling it out from an AFL perspective, headquarters perspective, is that... That's one part of it. The fans themselves, how do you get through to the fans who will deny being racist?
Well, we at Collingwood have cultural awareness training to all of our to our fan club, and so education is always a first step for anyone. I think there's a lot of people who have got an important part to add to this conversation. I think coming together as a leadership team to say, as an industry, what do we want this to look like? It's important to us. We want things to be different. We don't want this to be something that our next generation of young Aboriginal talent has to deal with on the ground. That leadership will permeate to the fans and to certainly the clubs and the you know, the executives across the industry.
I would think the playing group too, do you think, Jodie, now?
Absolutely.
Even though it's, 4 years removed from Adam's retirement year, the playing group is so much more empowered, isn't it, I think, to enact change? Is that a fair take?
I would think so. We see that happen in pockets, I think, that where people are calling out behaviours that are not okay. I think once upon a time in social media, then the action was to try and not give oxygen to comments where people are trolling or making comments. But I think in some of the recent instances within AFLW, we saw people call out behaviours that were just not okay, and they were much more active in calling out comments or behaviours or that were just not acceptable. So I think that plays an active part in what in our communities, in our grandstands, to say this behaviour is not okay and people are calling it out.
Mm. So Jodie, when you do sit down to watch the Adam Goods documentary, are you going in with a feeling or a sense of apprehension about reliving what it was you did live at the time?
Well, I think you're always preparing yourself so that you're not running your usual day of meetings back to back, so you don't pop into this conversation and pop out, because there's no doubt that there will be, you know, for any Aboriginal person that watches it, a real, and probably for any person watching it, but I think particularly Aboriginal people, a bit of unravelling, because it's just again that constant reminder of the racism that we all experience, and whether it's comments that your kids might get or the comments that you've experienced in that, you know, I've really explicit direct racism where, you know, I remember being at uni and having the uni results up on the wall and you'd go to look for your number and someone's written ABO next to your name, or being in a cafe waiting to be served and your dad doesn't get served because he's dark, black fella, that there are so many lived experiences, and it's just a reminder of all of that. So when I do go in to watch the film next week, there'll be a big space and time to allow to just process that human experience of the racism that we feel.
Mm.
But you can't help but go directly into your heart, just goes directly to Goodsy, for a person that's given so much to a game, so much to a game, that to have the game treat him like that way, treat him in the way that they did, it's just bullshit and it should never happen and it will never happen again. If we can take a role in advocating for that, and that when people say things or when people act in a way that is racist, that the people around them call it out, then hopefully that's a change that we can instigate. And then the broader community, when my kids are at uni and their results get put up on the wall, they're not called ABOs. Or that when Major Mudgee runs for Parliament, that he doesn't have to have kill all ABOs written on his name in 2019. That these things don't become something that's accepted. And that then the casual racism that people don't see when people are trying to get access to hospitals or education or jobs outside of the, you know, the higher architectural pieces that we need to change, then it will all impact and it will all have that. There's a direct relationship with what we do and what we take a stand for and how our people and our services and our communities respond. So I will take some additional time and I really look forward to seeing it because I think that it's a great example of how the arts can play a really important role in the conversations that we have. And hopefully we are all engaged in conversations about it once it becomes part of the available to the broader community. But I think it's, it will be difficult to watch.
Do your children still experience it?
My kids, I had protected them to some extent. We live in a bit of a bubble and in this very engaging community, but when you're amongst your own family and peers, you don't have that. I think it is more casual for them, but they see elements of it played out in different places from whether it's through media. I remember when the Royal Commission was announced for young Aboriginal kids in Dondale and that story was being told about the incarceration of Aboriginal kids and 100% of kids in prison in Northern Territory are Aboriginal kids. And whilst that story is being portrayed, they see it in that way that they haven't had to experience it directly. In fact, a positive story was when my daughter was in kinder and one of her friends, I've been playing an active role in classrooms and having conversations, sharing language and dance and a whole range of things. And one of my daughter's friends said, I want to be Aboriginal when I grow up, Mum. So hopefully we're seeing a change there in that they don't have to see it in that way, but it might be different once they get out into the bigger world.
And that would be your fear as a parent, I'd imagine, wouldn't it?
Well, it just limits you growing to your full potential as a human.
Because you've experienced it, obviously, yourself.
Absolutely. That, and you, the support network that you have and you just, you know, build resilience against
you shouldn't have
those
to,
impacting
should you?
Factors.
You shouldn't have to.
Well, you shouldn't have to, but what our elders and senior people have gone through, that the struggle that they've gone through, that, you know, you carry that importance of that legacy piece that they've left us going forward, so you have to move into the tough spaces to be able to, you know, own that role that we've now got as that next generation to move that next step forward. This is part of that. And you never know what format it's all going to take. That whilst we're formally having these engagements and developing new structures and programs and treaties, then these are the important conversations that are going to have an impact. But no one should ever have to.
Jodie, when was it you decided that being an Indigenous leader would be something that would be part of your life?
When did people decide that?
Probably not, do you?
Did you, know you get become tapped on that, the shoulder. You get tapped on the shoulder when I was, you know, 20 plus years ago, I was asked to run as an ATSIC councillor and be an advocate for our community in that, you know, formal leadership role. I was a young achiever. I was nominated as a young achiever. And
in the Telstra Business
Telstra
Awards?
Business. I was an Aboriginal young achiever for Victoria. Yeah. And you don't ever go out and put your hand up for these things. So when you decide, I think people push you forward. Actually, I think they, various different, I've had maybe half a dozen different leadership programs, opportunities where people have said, do you want to come and participate in this? And you just continue driving through your heart's passion of what you believe is important. And each of those opportunities equip you with more tools and experience to do that job even better. Which is the way I see it. And I think, you know, Collingwood's a great example of that, and I've learnt so much on the board from the incredible people that sit around that table in driving organisations in the way that, you know, doing the business of sport and, you know, the organisation as a whole. Each of those opportunities come up. As I said, I didn't reach out to say I want to go on the Collingwood Football Club board.
They reached out to you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So each of these opportunities have generally come my way.
Yeah. The Treaty Commission is something that you're also part of, just one of the many, many things you're part of?
That's part of the day job. As a consultant, we're working with the Treaty Commission to design an elder's voice, which will be part of the First People's Assembly. That'll be established in August, which is a formal structure that's going to work with the Victorian government to develop the framework in which treaties will be negotiated by First Nations people at a point in time.
Mm. And is this going to be with a national approach to it as well?
This is a state approach just for Victoria, yeah, but certainly working towards the national conversation to potentially a national treaty, a national voice for Aboriginal people, constitutional reform and a Makarrata Commission, which is what the Uluru Statement from the Heart has asked for. Victorian Aboriginal people have moved forward and are actually leading, I guess, across the nation,
yep,
as where we've come to in this stage, where we are now about to elect this assembly of 33 traditional owners.
Right. When you use the word Makarrata there, could you please explain that to our listeners today?
The Makarrata Commission?
Yeah.
The Uluru Statement from the Heart requested those, so that was one of those, one of the three requests, and it's an authority that would oversee any agreement making,
yep,
potentially a truth-telling commission of what we've seen in Canada, for example. Most places where we've seen reconciliation, we see a truth and reconciliation movement. So truth-telling has been a really important part of that. Australia's movement has been absent of that in part, mm-hmm, although the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Death and Custody, the Stolen Generations Report that came out, all are part of that truth-telling story, but they haven't really been actioned. This conversation we're having today is part of the truth-telling, but it hasn't been implemented across the nation. So a Makarrata Commission would be an authority that would potentially oversee, yeah, that.
And again, for the goal out of the treaty itself, the Treaty Commission, to have a voice? Is it to have an acknowledgement? And is it to have a say in anything that goes on? Is that how it's meant to play out once you get it established?
Yes. Well, the first step is, you know, treaties, you know, could take 15 years or so to establish, but the first step is creating that framework, which are the parameters in which a treaty could be negotiated. So what is on the table? But the intent is to recognise the rights of Aboriginal people and provide a platform to realise our economic and social potential.
If there's one thing as you sit here today that you could click your fingers and change, what would that be?
It's truth-telling.
Yeah. We're not good at it?
We're not good at it because we haven't done it.
Hmm.
And
it's going to be very confronting when we do.
Makes people feel uncomfortable. Yeah. And it's hard in the priority of things that we're all trying to juggle as parents and community members and our kids, 40 teams on the weekend, that what information do we have access to?
Hmm.
Where are the forums where we have these conversations? If they're not within our existing systems and structures, it doesn't seem to happen.
Mm.
So prioritising the importance of it is one thing, and just having the information in the right format for people to access.
Yep.
So these conversations now will all stimulate that. So whilst I don't seek out to be necessarily the public speaker, it's an important part of the conversation it has to have. So we'll lean in and play our role to help be an advocate to ensure that others feel comfortable to do that too.
And specifically of the truth-telling, what is it we need to take most out of?
History and the impact of history in today. And then from that, hopefully we can have a valuing of Aboriginal ways of doing. You know, we've got knowledge that's ensured the sustainability of this country for thousands of years. So Aboriginal ways, even though, you know, in times past we've heard certain presidents say that if Aboriginal people are only more like us, they might be doing okay. Maybe it should be the other way around, that Aboriginal ways of doing and the values in which we have of reciprocity and respect and sustainability and, you know, community and the working together ways in which have informed our traditional ways that are all alive and well in this contemporary practices, then there's so much that we can learn and to be part of our identity going forward in our everyday, that I think the best example that people are most familiar with is in our Maori brothers and sisters, where we have such a love for the Maori language, such a love for cultural practices like the haka that's practiced by not only the Indigenous members on the field but also the non-Indigenous. There's no hesitation, there's no uncomfortableness, there's just a sense of known importance and value that that brings to strengthening people. Mm. So it's a sense of pride. So my end game would have that sense of pride where people walk side by side.
The Collingwood, or the president you quoted there a few moments ago, was a Collingwood president, Alan McAllister.
Correct.
The club you're now working for.
I know.
It's come a long way in that relatively short time.
Modern Collingwood is the sky is the limit, and the future that we are going to, the role that we're going to play in the future within Aboriginal Australia is really exciting. Just watch this space.
Mm.
It's going to be incredible.
Jodie Sizer, really appreciate your time today on In the Game.
Thank you.